Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Going fantastic.
Awesome. It's a bit of rainstorms happening lately, and a bit of hot weather happening lately. And
yeah, it's all over the place. It's very chaotic.
Yeah.
Very chaotic.
Yeah, I don't like it. Mind you.
It washes the rain, the smoke from the sky?
It makes me not have to waste my own water on the lawns.
Oh, there you go.
And the gardens.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that. Yeah. And our bird, I don't know if you noticed the our bird feeders there. You know how I have those big baskets underneath?
Yep.
They're not there.
What do you mean? They got blown away?
No. I had to take them down. Because Fatty McRaccoon.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I got up at 2 o'clock the other morning. And I look out the window, window, see what's happening at 2 o'clock in the morning. And there's a raccoon hanging off of it.
Swinging it like it's a hammock.
Yep, and then I get up the next morning, that one's half off. There's another one right off.
Hmm.
And because it's good because it catches all the seed, yep. And then the mourning doves sit in them
mm-hmm.
and eat the seed. And it keeps it off my grass and my garden.
Yeah.
Less weeds to pull.
Exactly.
Fatty McRaccoon isn't helping. He's a big raccoon, too.
So he's getting a lot of snacks around
the neighborhood. Oh, he's getting a lot of snackage. He also uses our bird bath as a stepping stool and knocked it over and broke it.
Oh, no.
So now we have a bird bath on the ground because the whole base thingy that it sits on mm-hmm. broke.
Yeah.
Because of Fatty McRaccoon. I have no problems with raccoons if they don't break my stuff.
If they don't
stuff.
Break stuff.
But when you start breaking my stuff. So, yeah, we took those down to mm-hmm. hopefully he'll no longer come around going, oh, I guess this snack truck rolled out of town. We'll wait a couple weeks, put them back up.
And, yeah.
Because they've made such a difference.
Hmm.
But other than that.
Yeah, excellent.
Things are great. Things are groovy. Things are happening.
Yes, they are.
Uh-huh.
It's a busy summer for us this summer.
It's because we left it all to the end.
Well,
this has been in the 10 years we've been doing this, the most hectic summer we've had
mm-hmm.
because both of us have left everything right to the end, holiday wise. So yeah, we got to record 4 shows this week. yeah, we got to wrangle people in to come and record with us and. Yeah, this will be awesome. But
that's all fun.
It is what it is. We enjoy it. We do it for our fans. All 7 or 8 of them.
Yes, all 7 or 8.
Well, let's just jump right into this because we're already talking about raccoons.
Yep. There are other furry friends.
And there's other furry friends. So if you're down in Maryland, all recreational water areas in one of Maryland's most popular state parks has remained closed as authorities investigate what they say is a possible rabies outbreak within the local beaver population.
Well, that's not good.
No, it's not something you think about either. Parts of Cunnington Falls State Park closed to the public following 2 rabid beaver attacks on humans in less than 2 weeks.
If you get 2, it spreads easily amongst, mm-hmm. yeah, because beavers tend to have a close living quarters when they're in their huts and so on.
Mm-hmm. The latest beaver attack at the park in Frederick County, about 66 miles northwest of Baltimore, occurred when a 19-year-old man reported that he was bitten in the ankle by an aggressive beaver while fishing in the park.
Now, beavers, they can chop down trees with their teeth. That's horrifying to think of something coming after your ankle.
Well, you know what? Saying that he was rabid when maybe because dude was maybe skinny and tall and looked like a tree.
Maybe.
Maybe he just needed glasses.
The tree's moving.
Yeah, there's something wrong with the beaver's eyesight. That's according to Maryland Department of Natural Resources, the NRP. The victim drove himself to a medical center where he was treated. Following the attack, NRP officers caught and euthanized the beaver. And they said the test results came back and determined the beaver had rabies.
Now, they did have to euthanize it. You know what it takes to test for rabies?
Yeah, they do something with the brain.
They have to test the brain, yeah.
Yeah, so they did have to euthanize it.
Yeah, no choice. So you want to test it. You can't just let me stick this thing in your brain for a second here.
This attack followed an incident in July at the same park in which a 13-year-old swimmer was bitten by a beaver that was also captured, euthanized, and tested positive for rabies.
Boom, boom. That's two.
Mm-hmm. In response to the latest attack, officials closed large sections of the park, including its boat ramp, so no paddling. Creek and lake areas. Swimming, fishing, boating, and all other water access prohibited until the area can be confirmed safe for visitors.
So you can vaccinate against rabies, as I understand it, and they've done this in locations where they've dropped bait in the forest.
Right.
And so the animals come along, eat the bait, become vaccinated, right? But, you know, it's kind of hard to do with beavers. It's like, I'm not sure how you would put down bait for a beaver because they eat bark and
it's fish.
Do they eat fish?
Yeah.
So you're gonna dope up the fish with the vaccination and
that's what I'm figuring. Just lay it outside his house. Hey buddy. 43 acre Cunningham Falls State Park features Maryland's highest cascading waterfall and attracts more than 575,000 visitors a year.
Oops.
That's a lot of beaver biting.
Yes.
DNR's Wildlife and Heritage Services says it is instituted nighttime and daytime surveillance at the park's lake in an effort to remove beavers from the park. Beaver Lodge found in the park was also dismantled. Beaver attacks on people are rare and thought to primarily involve rabid animals. And before this summer, the last recorded beaver attack is in Maryland, occurred in 2021.
It's rare.
Rare. Beavers are typically non-aggressive and avoid conflict with humans, but people should still maintain a safe minimum viewing distance of 25 yards. Earlier this year, an 8-year-old boy was injured and attacked by a beaver at Henry Lake, New Jersey, according to health department. The police said the boy was fishing with his family from the shoreline of Henry Lake in May when a beaver came out of the water, charged the boy, biting him in the upper thigh when he tripped and fell. Bystander video of the beaver attack was obtained and showed a member of the child's family pulling the beaver off the child and hurling the animal back into the lake. What else are you going to do with it?
Yoink!
The beaver was captured, euthanized, and tested positive for rabies. Health department says the child and several other people who were bitten while rescuing the boy from the animal underwent treatment for rabies.
So that was New Jersey.
New Jersey to Maryland.
There's a rash of rabid beavers going on down there.
In the old east coast of the United States.
It's not good.
No.
So that can quickly wipe out a population if it's interspersed with this with rabies.
Interesting.
That's going to be tough to... because without trying to, what are you going to do? Like, you can't test them unless you euthanize them.
Right.
So, I guess.
I guess just monitor what they're doing.
Monitor what they're doing, but eventually it's going to kill them anyway. So, you have a specific lifespan once you get rabies.
But if you see ones that are acting weird, you're going to think, ooh.
Yeah.
But if you got one just going about their daily business.
Yeah.
It's doing good. It doesn't have it now,
but it's eventually going to have rabies because it's going through the whole, what is a bunch of beavers called?
I'll have to Google that. Oh, now you got to Google bunch of beavers. I don't know.
Group of beavers.
Is it group of beavers?
Colony or family.
Oh, colony.
A group of beavers most commonly called a colony or a family of beavers.
These are things you learn in like grade 5. And because you don't think of it for 40 years.
Well...
It just escapes.
Very few that I think of, like with cows, horses, whatever. It's a herd. Crows is easy. That's the only one I really remember. A murder of crows. So the fun
a parliament ones, of owls.
Yes, that one's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't remember all of them. Like how often do you think about a group of beavers?
Yeah. That colony over there.
Yeah, there's a colony of beavers there.
Anyway, if you're in the East Coast of the United States, watch out for beavers.
Yes, be careful. Yeah, watch out for aggressive beavers. Yeah. Honestly, I've never, only once in my entire life have I seen a beaver come up to me, and that was while canoeing, and this little baby beaver, it was, I don't know, like 6 inches long, and it was just crying, swimming down the river towards us, and then it got close enough, it's like, oh, do you have bad eyesight there, buddy? He came within a foot of the canoe, and then, whoa! Panicked and swam away. It's like, that was weird. But he was crying like we were its mama. And then it saw as it got close, almost touched the canoe and bolted. It's like, are you blind? Like, what's wrong, little guy?
Weird.
I do not look like your mother, I hope.
I don't think I've ever gotten that close to a wild beaver.
No.
In the canoe.
They're always,
they always slap their tails
like
and off they go.
200 feet away and they slap their tail and disappear. Yeah. It's like, ooh. Interesting. So, yeah, if a beaver does approach you,
run.
Watch it.
Run.
Because the last thing you want to do is have to get treated rabies for shots. Rabies. Because that'll... I've never had it.
I heard it's massive.
A bunch of shots to the belly.
Yep.
And they shoot it. It's like, ah, that's not fun. Now, I hear it's very painful to get treated. The treatment would be worse than the bite, I guess.
Right.
Unless you let the beaver bite you until your foot comes right off.
Yeah.
That might hurt.
Might.
More than the needles. But who's going to stand there that long?
And if you get rabies and run around biting people. Or give the beaver a taste of his own medicine.
So there's something, too. If you had rabies, it would be illegal to euthanize a human to test them for rabies.
So bite as many people as you can, quickly.
Yes.
We got to Google this. That's the show. We'll talk to you next week about our rabies. Oy. Yeah, hopefully it doesn't spread too far.
Yeah.
I just heard about this one from one of our listeners. Tour International Danubian. The Danube River, one of the largest rivers in the world, crosses Europe from west to east, connects 10 countries. Tour International Danubian, the TID, is the longest trip for canoes, kayaks, and rowboats, and takes place on the Danube since 1956.
And
so it's this.
Well, we're preparing tour. For this. I was looking at a map. I knew the Danube River was a long river, but I had no idea it was that long. And so I traced it from the coast down by Romania, Ukraine, all the way up into like Germany and the Switzerland border. Mm-hmm. And it's a long river,
right?
Holy cow!
And I've got to call you out on this one. Which way does it run, or does it run both ways?
It sort of does. So the headwaters of the Danube also, I think it meets up at the peak in Switzerland-Germany border, and it flows, that other river flows west. The Danube flows southeast. Mm-hmm. But at the headwaters, at the very peak, you can see on, if you go on not satellite view, but if you go on normal view, there's all these little brooks and streams that run into it. So there is a headwater, but from that peak, it runs both ways.
Yeah, I'm not buying it.
He was making fun of me
at
earlier.
At 6 o'clock at night, they change the direction. Had I known, would save me a lot of time. We'll take the Danube across four countries by lunchtime, then wait, and then 6 o'clock we can just sail back home because they changed direction.
It meets two oceans, that water, that path. And there's a peak. There's at the very top on the Swiss-German border.
Goes down one side and down the other.
Yeah.
So the TID is a long-distance boat tour where you carry your own gear and tents. Actual route starts off in Ingolstadt, Germany, usually on the second last weekend of June, from where it leads through a co-organizing countries of Austria, Slovakia, Hungary, Croatia, Serbia, and Romania, and terminates in the first week of September after 2,475 kilometers in Romania at the Black Sea.
Amazing.
So, yeah, like July, August. So like 2 months of just paddling.
11 weeks, they said.
Mm-hmm. Due to the war in the Ukraine, the Romanian leg has to be shortened for security reasons.
The border between Romania and Ukraine is the Danube River.
Yeah. Political importance of the TID is immense. Its main target set from the beginning was to bring together people from diverse cultures with all their political, religious, and ideological differences. Furthermore, friendships should be built. The solidarity among all sportsmen and people of other countries should be strengthened, and the friendship and peace of people, especially the Danube countries, should be promoted. The International TID Conference in Komárno, Slovakia, back in October of 2025. The time schedule for details of the tour were fixed. The 69th TID started 20th of June 2026, so it's on, in Ingolstadt, Germany, and ends the 30th of August 2026 in Brela, Romania. So it's just almost finished in a few weeks.
Yeah.
All organizers wanted to include the Romanian leg of the TID again, like last year, as far as possible concerning the security situation. Tour will be continued in Brela, kilometer 172 of the Danube. So it ends again about 40 kilometers before the Ukrainian border. There's a bunch of little things that talk about it. And the Tour International Danubian is an international water trekking event for canoeists and rowers where the personal equipment has to be carried within the boat. So it's not like a supported...
Yeah, you're not allowed to have a support van and stuff like that.
Objectives of the TID are the athletic experience, the encounter of participants among themselves, as well as with people from the Danube countries, with their cultural, economic, and national characteristics. Bases of TID are helpfulness, thoughtfulness, and tolerance, as well as the protection of water, wildlife, and environment. There is no entitlement at all to any kind of basic provisions on the tour. Participants and boats have to be equipped according to safety instructions on international waterways, life jackets, buoyancy bodies, etc. Boats need to carry identification in accordance with the rules and regulations for international waterways. There is no guidance or leadership provided on the water. There is a thing they were saying, like some of the countries have their own little rules. You have to know them.
Yes.
So, like, they're not going to go, oh, by the way, before you cross over the border here, you have to know this stuff.
And it's up to you to know it.
Yeah. Indicated legs are to be strictly followed at the participant's own responsibility. Arrival at each campsite is at the latest at 6 p.m. Nighttime peace is between 10 and 6 a.m. So Germany, June 20th to 27th, is 240 kilometers. Austria, June 28th to July 7th, 331 kilometers. Slovakia, July 8th to 11th, 120 kilometers. Hungary, July 12th to 21st, 322 kilometers. Serbia, July 22nd. Now, I never got a chance to look, but it sounds like they go into Serbia, bop up to Croatia and back down into Serbia.
Because
there's two. So that's
just very 46, short legs. Yeah, so it just kind of skims in and out of those two countries.
Croatia, July 23rd to 24th is 62 kilometers. And then Serbia again, July 25th to August 8th, which is 485 kilometers. Chunk. Bulgaria, August 9th to 23rd, 490 kilometers. And then Romania, August 24th to 30th, 203 kilometers. So right now they're in Bulgaria as we're recording this.
And so as the groups go through, I imagine you're going to be like each day, you're going to be leapfrogging. You're going to keep meeting the same people constantly. So that's really interesting. I guess it's sort of their way of international relations, right?
Well, and that's part of what they say is to meet the other people, you know, that are on here. So could be you end up with a group of three or four canoes all paddling down together sort of deal. There's a few locks along the route which you can go through or portage around.
Yeah.
And there's a few bristle slides. A bristle slide on a navigable waterway or canal is a specialized sloped ramp equipped with heavy plastic or nylon bristles. It allows small boats, canoes, rowboats to slide safely past a weir, lock, or dam without needing a full portage.
So if you ever seen... ski jumpers mm-hmm. or like the summer training for skiers, it's on a bristle slide.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's either it's a bristle slide or a roller treadmill, or like for those big ski jumps, they have the bristle slides to slide down and jump off.
Do you remember we were Alan Drummond of Kingdom Outdoor Products? We're sending some videos back and forth of the big log rafts with the people on them and the guys steering.
Yep.
And then they go down that slope.
There's portions that get wet.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But it's a bristle slide,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So that's sort of what they got, which is, I'd go down there just
it'd be fun
for the sake of doing that.
Yeah. And it's just to reduce friction so you can slide easier.
There's a lot more rules and guidelines to follow in regards to participating, but it sounds like a lot of fun if you've got the time to do it. Like I say, what are you doing this July and August? Well, starting in Germany and ending up in the Black Sea and in Romania.
It's great for teachers because they get the summer off. Well, I don't know what it's like over there, but North America, everybody has a summer.
Well, they say it's an international thing, so there's people from around the world that come to do this thing. So, Tour International Danubien. Danubien. Since 1956.
Amazing.
Yeah. Check it out. It looks pretty good. And speaking of locks, this weekend, third of the Triple Crown, Lock and Paddle, Ottawa, heading there.
I'm not. But you sort of already have done two of them.
Yep.
One sort of unofficial, but you were there.
Yep.
Because they had to cancel it due to weather and smoke and whatever.
Yeah, Peterborough one got canceled. So,
but you still went.
We went and did it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we're rebels that way.
Rebels with a cause.
Rebels without a clue. and then, before that, John Brower and I, we headed to Montreal, did the Lock and Paddle in Montreal. That was a neat day trip.
Mm-hmm. That's a long day.
5 hours there, 5 hours on the water, 5 hours back. There's a day for you.
Ouch.
I have no problems doing stuff like I wouldn't do it every weekend, mind you.
Yeah.
But, it's fun to do stuff like that once in a while. Because later on in life, you're just going to be sitting there going, I remember the time that
I didn't do this and I wanted to.
The one time Mackenzie and I got up early, drove all the way up to North Tea Lake, paddled in, did the portages into Manitou, stayed overnight. Paddled back out.
Hmm.
Right? No, sorry. We didn't.
Like a one-nighter?
Didn't do North Tea. We went all the way around to Kiosk that time.
Oh, wow.
We went all the way up to Kiosk, all the way in for one night and out. And people looking at us like, what are you doing? It's more than just the one night there. Yes. It's the whole journey and spending time together and getting some paddling and all that sort of stuff. And there was some fun stuff that happened on the way out, too. So.
Excellent.
Yeah. But, this Saturday, August 15th, Lock and Paddle Ottawa, the Hartswell Lock. They say be there before 1:30 or by 1:30. It's 20 minutes from, we park at Hogsback Parking. There's a big parking lot there. $8. Lock and Paddle starts at 2. It's a double lock. So the top lock fills up with boats and then they descend and transfer to the bottom lock, and then the top one fills up again, and the rest of the boats come in. And then you zip on through. I'm trying to remember last year, because last year was the first year we went to it. I think they even them out and open the middle doors so that all the boats are together.
Oh, wow.
And then they lower everything and everybody scoots out.
Because you can't do that in the Peterborough lift lock. They're very separate bathtubs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but they bring them halfway, right?
Yes, they do stop, pause halfway.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they open the doors up there.
It washes everybody out.
It's just like a giant waterfall of boats. Ew, look at the colors.
Enjoy the waterfall, boys.
You can go up. Once you go through there, you can go up and paddle for a while up the canal and then come on back, and you can either go through the locks again. We had to wait a while for the locks on the way back.
Oh, yeah?
And a few people portaged instead.
Hmm.
And at the end, we're sitting there, we should have just portaged. It took a while. But no, it's a lot of fun, a lot of people. Bring your canoe or kayak. Make sure you got your PFD. safety kit with a signaling device, buoyant line, watertight flashlight, and a bailing bucket, sunscreen and hat, and a water bottle, snacks if you want them. You can go to parks.canada.ca to find out more info, like directions, where to park, all that sort of stuff. And, yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. We'll be there again. John's bringing his canoe. My brother's actually going to join me.
Okay.
And I got some friends from Ottawa that are going to, that I rarely see that. Hey, we'll grab our canoe and meet up with you. So it'll be fun. Awesome. And that'll be three lock and paddles. Technically in my book, I'm counting it.
Yeah, I would too.
The Triple Crown this year.
Excellent. Woo-hoo! Perfect.
Good times. You know where I would like to paddle, though?
The moon?
Yeah. Don't get me thinking about that again. Norway.
Yes. Yes. It'd be beautiful there, wouldn't it? It'd be amazing.
When you think of Norway, you're thinking of the cruise ships going up the fjords, all the cliffs and the sea and all that sort of stuff, right? Yep. Well, in the wooded heart of eastern Norway, a modest canoe rental on the shore of Saltbufjorden is quietly turning Fjorda's maze of forested lakes and channels into one of Scandinavia's most intriguing water-based wilderness escapes.
Very cool.
So nothing to do with the big cruise ships and the fjords.
Yeah.
Fjorda, a lesser-known lake system in the Hadeland region of north of Oslo, is gaining attention among paddlers seeking remote-feeling adventures without long transfers to Norway's far north. Publicly available information describes Fjorda as a cluster of small and larger lakes linked by narrow sounds and natural channels, forming a sheltered inland water network ringed by pine forest and low hills rather than sheer ocean fjord cliffs.
Ooh, nice.
So, sounds fun.
It does.
Sounds great.
Yeah. It'd be beautiful there.
The area has long been popular with Norwegian paddlers, but has remained relatively obscure internationally compared to the country's headline coastal fjords, right?
Of course.
And established canoe destinations such as Femundsmarka National Park. Regional tourism materials increasingly refer to Fjorda as one of the eastern Norway's most attractive spots for canoeing, highlighting its combination of calm water, wild camping opportunities, and short travel times from the capital region. So this is something cool, like just a, you know, a little drive north of Oslo.
Yeah.
I mean, chances are if you're hitting one of the big cities, Oslo, Norway is going to be it.
Yeah.
Right?
I've been to Oslo.
See, and you could have gone here.
I didn't know about this.
Geographical references note that the Norwegian term fjord can also be used for long, narrow freshwater lakes in the country's interior, which helps explain why this inland lake maze carries a name that sounds coastal to many international travelers. In practice, Fjorda offers a very different experience from sea kayaking between towering rock walls.
Oh, yeah.
Focusing instead on the quiet bays, sheltered channels, and island-dotted stretches suited to open canoes and family groups. Recent coverage from Norwegian outdoor and tourism outlets present Fjorda as a kind of secret canoe paradise wedged between larger lakes of Innlandet and Viken counties, where paddlers can disappear into a tangle of waterways yet remain within a manageable radius of major road and rail links. So basically, you can go there. Chances are you're not going to get lost. Even if you think you're getting lost, just keep going and eventually you will come across a railroad track or a road. The northern end of Saltbufjorden, one of Fjorda's central basins, a small operator trading as Fjorda Canoe Rental and Vestland Canoe Rental, has become a key access point to the lake system. Bases located near Bjørneroa and is described as a long-established outfitter with canoe hire at the water's edge so visitors can load their gear and push off directly from the dock.
Cool.
Service descriptions indicate that paddlers can choose from short out and back excursions, full day loops, and multi-day itineraries that weave through sheltered narrows to neighboring lakes. The low-profile business model focuses on straightforward equipment rental rather than heavily guided packages, appealing to independent travelers who are comfortable planning their own routes. So, like here, if we go up to Algonquin Outfitters, they'll totally outfit you for a week-long canoe trip.
Doesn't matter what it is.
They don't.
Yeah,
they're gearing more towards your gear you're going to need to get out for the day.
This is your bare minimum.
Maybe an overnight sort of thing. Here's your snackage, that sort of stuff. So. But it's getting people out there, right?
Absolutely.
The same shoreline property also offers basic rental cabins.
Ooh.
See, this is like family route for you, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Characterized in public information as simple structures with electricity but no running water. That's fine.
Yeah.
You got a lake to swim in. As long as I can have a light on at night.
Yes.
Right? Cook outside.
Yeah.
That sort of
thing. It sounds awesome.
Canoes are bundled into some cabin rentals, reinforcing the concept of a doorstep paddling base where guests can spend an evening on the water and retreat to a rustic shelter rather than a full service resort. I'd rather a cabin like this than staying at like a big resort.
Yes.
We got canoes for the guests.
I prefer the more rustic kind of feel of things.
Combination of connected lakes, protected channels, and low motorboat traffic. There's a key. Also allows paddlers to design trips that feel adventurous without demanding advanced whitewater or open sea skills. Travel guides in Norwegian canoeing frequently point to fjords, calm inland water, as well as suited to families, beginners, and those looking to link gentle paddling with lakeside hiking and swimming. Because the water network extends in multiple directions from Saltbyfjorden, more experienced visitors can build longer circuits, shifting camp each night between forested peninsulas and small islands where wild camping is permitted under Norway's outdoor access principles when practiced responsibly. Publicly available guidance from Norwegian authorities emphasizes using existing fire rings, keeping respectful distances from cabins and farms, and leaving no trace at informal sites. See, this is a lot of stuff we do anyway.
Oh, yes.
Like, exactly, we take this for granted.
Yeah.
That this is what you do.
And we do take it for granted, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, and just, on many trips, it's like you meet somebody who's just blown away by what we have, the scenery and the massive amounts of the wilds that we have, and they come from all over the world to come see campgrounds or backcountry areas that we have, and it's like, oh, I never thought of that. People are just spending so much money just to come here and see it, and we're just kind of taking it for granted.
But, and like I say, with the using the fire rings and keeping distances and leave no trace.
Yeah.
Like, the majority of us just do that anyway and it's sort of have to be
to us here.
It's just natural to us now, right? Yeah. For many visitors, the draw lies in the ability to feel deep in the woods after only a few hours of paddling. Scandinavian outdoor media describes weaving through narrow reed-lined passages, rounding rocky points to find secluded coves, and spotting fish rising in the evening calm.
That's awesome.
Compared to Norway's larger national parks, where logistics and distances can be demanding, fjord-scale allows for flexible route planning and easy retreat if conditions change. So this sounds like a beginner's canoe paddling area.
Yep.
Like, if you want to get into tripping, this is where you start. You know what I'm saying? Because everything's close, everything's easy, but you get your feet wet. And then, if you enjoy it, then, maybe I will hit one of these other parks they're talking about and, build up from there, right?
Yeah. Get your feet wet, literally and metaphorically.
As interest in low-impact self-power travel grows, this style of canoe touring has become increasingly prominent in Norway's broader adventure profile. National tourism resources now list canoeing and kayaking alongside hiking and cycling as core activities. As they should.
As they should.
The main paddling season in eastern Norway typically runs from late spring to early autumn, with water temperatures lagging behind the air, but daylight hours stretching late into the evening in midsummer. Shoulder seasons, visitors are encouraged to use dry layers and monitor weather forecasts closely, as conditions on exposed lakes reaches can shift quickly. So, if you had your choice, how early and how late would you like the sun to come up and go down if you were backcountry?
Well, since I like to sleep in, sunrise should be at about 9 a.m.
Okie dokie.
And if there's no fire ban, I really like campfires, so the sun should set at like, I don't know, 7.
So, so 10 hours of sun a day. That's plenty.
Sure.
I think for me it would be like a 6 a.m. sunrise.
I'd never see a sunrise.
And like a midnight sunset would be cool. Every other day, because like you say, with the sun, with the sitting around the fire and stuff like that, because it'd be a vicious circle at that point. Because you, well, I'm going to stay up past midnight to get a fire, but you're not going to be up at sunrise.
No,
to be exactly. On the water.
Yeah,
and I guess it would depend on the kind of trip you're doing too. The longer trips, and you want to make distance.
Yes,
then a 6 a.m. sunrise and a midnight sunset would be awesome.
Yep, ideal.
Right.
Well, you hear about people who paddle in Canada's north, and in the midsummer when you have most of the sun, you hear people going, you know, whether you're paddling. I've heard that so many people talk about this. It's like they're paddling along. It's like, yeah, I'm getting hungry. We should stop soon. What time is it? It's 11 p.m. 11 p.m.? We missed supper.
And lunch. And yesterday's breakfast.
But yeah, there's certain times of the year up north where it's perpetual sun, or you can have like 10 hours of sunrise and sunset, right? So it's depending on the time of year, you can nail it perfectly.
Yeah, I think I like a bit more sun, a bit more light than
is this sunrise people. Or sunset? Yes.
Yes. Flip a coin, baby. General boating guidelines from national agencies stress the importance of life jackets for all ages, checking local bylaws for any restrictions on motor use, and drying boats and gear between lakes to help prevent the spread of aquatic organisms.
Oh, yes.
That's one thing I would like to see is more boat washing stations at major...
At every place, yeah.
Lake takeouts and put-ins and stuff like that.
Like, it kind of seems inevitable that you talk about there's going to be invasive species. But the longest we can hold it off, the better.
Like, I don't know, like, a Canoe Lake in Algonquin and Opiongo, stuff like that, why there aren't canoe washing stations.
Major entry points. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of Canoe Lake. I mean, how many summer camps start?
Yeah.
You know, how many trips start from Canoe Lake? How many times in the fall are we at Opiongo?
Yeah.
And there's people in boats.
And there's so many ways they could accommodate this. Like, I saw a thing the other day. They're talking about cleaning construction equipment on construction sites. There's a couple in the area right now. And where they set up these portable wash things and they'll drive heavy equipment. If you're going off site, you just drive. It's like a gigantic mobile car wash, and it just completely washes the undercarriage of this construction equipment. Mm-hmm. So you're not carrying stuff down the roads and dumping dirt and whatever, but it also, it can, if you use it in the right places, right locations, you could shoot a canoe through one of these things. It could have a low level of chlorine in it or something, do a quick rinse, and boom. It's like a gigantic dishwasher type thing, right?
It's a dishwasher for my canoe. Send four or five of them.
There's lots of opportunities, because if you want to keep invasive species out of protected areas like Algonquin Park, for example, and you just go in, do a quick spritz like with a small squirt bottle, and then give it a good rinse off so that whatever you're taking in with you on the exit point, you're not taking anything that's invasive out of Algonquin, but I guess you should rinse then too.
Mm-hmm.
But you're really trying to protect it, and especially out west where they've closed down all these lakes. In BC, we talked about a couple episodes ago where yep. they've shut the lakes down. It's like, well, we've witnessed that these whirling disease on these fish. We have to close the lakes down because they're transmitting these diseases amongst the fish. So nobody's allowed to go here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to have that happen.
I gotta think it's coming. I got to think it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, you can't help it because there's enough people that aren't careful or just they don't know that they're not being careful enough,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
I don't think people would purposely. I hope people wouldn't purposely.
No, but it's a lot of the new people that are doing it for the first time.
They just haven't learned.
Haven't, you know, yep. been around it sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So. From a logistical perspective, Fjorda's position in eastern Norway is a significant part of its appeal. Journey times by road from Oslo region are suitable for a weekend trip. Visitors arriving without vehicles can potentially combine public transport with local transfers, although the last stretch may require planning around infrequent rural services. As international travelers look beyond Norway's iconic fjord cruises and mountain viewpoints, inland paddling hubs like Fjorda are starting to occupy more space in guidebooks, online travel features, and regional marketing material. Coverage increasingly presents the area as a counterpoint to busier coastal routes, promising quieter campsites, lighter infrastructure, and a closer connection to forest and freshwater ecosystems. Presence of a long-running canoe rental business combined with simple cabin accommodations and established informal camping culture positions Fjorda to benefit from these shifting trends. At the same time, publicly available guidance from Norwegian outdoor organizations underlines that the area's continued appeal depends on careful visitor behavior, including waste management, respect for private land, and adherence to fire regulations during dry periods. So, like fire bans.
Mm-hmm.
For now, Fjorda remains comparatively low-key on the global stage, even as a domestic and regional visitors share more images and trip reports from its sheltered bays and rocky islands. With its understated rental base in Saltbjørnfjorden acting as a gateway, the lake system exemplifies how small-scale infrastructure can open up substantial wilderness-style experiences within reach of major cities.
And that's key. It's accessibility. Yeah. You want to get more people out. If it's accessible from a major city, perfect.
Well, like I said, if you're coming in on one of those cruise ships.
Yeah, there you go.
And you're going to be in town for a week and you mm-hmm. want to take a couple of days and go do some paddling.
Mm-hmm.
Whether approached as a family-friendly weekend escape or a stepstone toward longer Nordic canoe expeditions, Fjorda's emerging reputation suggests that Norway's epic water adventures are no longer confined to the famous saltwater fjords.
Perfect.
So this sounds like now would be the time to hit these places up before they become very popular.
Yes, true, true.
Right?
Yeah. And it also, what this does, like they say, you're not confined to the saltwater fjords. Like, if you can get off that, can you imagine how weather changes could really make a saltwater fjord risky, dangerous with mm-hmm. the surges and the waves and whatever? If you can get into this, it's more of a protected area. It's
right?
It's a really somewhat safe. It's family friendly, right?
Sit on shore under the tarp and
yeah.
see the wilderness Enjoy. Of Norway.
Exactly. Yeehaw.
Another one for the list.
Another one for the list. Yeah.
You've seen the Oru folding kayak.
I have.
And you've seen the Tesla dumpster on wheels.
Yes. I know where you're going.
A new press break and a landscape full of lakes proved a fairly persuasive combination. Designed by Guillaume Bloget during a residency in France, Sharp is a kayak made from folded aluminum sheet and cork, conceived after the workshop acquired the machinery needed to shape its metallic hull. Rather than translating the familiar language of molded plastic or composite kayaks into metal, the project makes folding itself both structure and expression. So Sharp, S-H-A-R-P, is the name of this kayak, made from aluminum sheeting, and it looks like a folding Oru kayak, except it doesn't fold. It's got the ridges.
Yeah, you're not going to fold this one.
And if an Oru kayak and one of those Tesla dumpsters had a baby, it'd be the Sharp kayak.
Yeah.
Hull was designed around a simple performance goal. Transform the force of each paddle stroke into forward glide with as little loss as possible. Hydrodynamic profile emerged through an
It's step by step.
I don't think I've ever seen
it's
that.
It's an iteration.
Before.
I have. It's like iteration. It's like one. It's like model one, model 1.1, model 1.2, model 1.3. The iterative process to build it.
Iterative process of half scale models, each tested directly in water before its final full size version was produced. The resulting geometry remains sharply faceted above the surface while negotiating the considerably less angular business of moving efficiently through water. No internal frame is required to give Sharp its structure. Instead, the aluminum sheet is stiffened entirely through folding, forming a double wall construction that also makes the kayak unsinkable. Where have we heard that before, Titanic? Creases become ribs, surfaces become structure, and a fabrication technique normally associated with industrial sheet metal is pushed into rather more leisurely territory of paddling. Inside the cockpit, a cork seat softens the encounter between body and boat. Its round form mediates between the curves of the paddler and the hard angles of the folded aluminum shell. Introducing warmth and tactility into an otherwise unapologetically metallic object.
It does look kind of cool, but it does remind me of the Cybertruck.
Right?
It's like, whoa!
On the outside, the sheen of the aluminum catches the fragment's reflection from the surrounding water, making the kayak visually change with the conditions around. I bet you blaring sun, that baby's going to be hot. That's going to
cause
some burns.
No, it'd be reflective. It wouldn't burn, but all the canoes and kayaks around you would burn.
Yeah, I blinded 12 of my paddling friends on the weekend. A final kayak follows a development process grounded as much in making as drawing. After successive scale models established the hull geometry, craftsman Antoine Riviere produced the first full-scale prototype, translating the folds and double wall construction into a functional vessel. The object remains deliberately close to that workshop logic rather than being reformulated for anonymous mass manufacture.
Mm-hmm.
Sharp is now produced on demand by Riviere, extending the project's emphasis on local production beyond the original residency. Aluminum, cork, and a handful of carefully resolved folds are effectively asked to do all the work, flotation, structure, ergonomics, and incidentally, quite a lot of visual drama. For a kayak born from the arrival of a new machine in a workshop, it makes a convincing case for occasionally designing around the tool first and asking questions later. Like I say, it does look like a cross between an Oru kayak and a Cybertruck.
Yep.
If you Google Sharp kayak, it comes right up.
Okay.
It does look cool.
Yeah.
I'm not going to buy one.
It's not very family friendly. Look, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that
Does
would
it give the weight.
No, that would be awesome in canoe polo. You would be banned first thing. That's got that sharp.
He impaled the competition.
He's going for the ball. Let him have it.
Here comes the skewer kayak.
Oh, man. No, definitely Google Sharp kayak. And take a peek at it. It does look cool.
Mm-hmm.
And just if you get into the engineering aspect of it,
it's
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. This one popped. I just had to put this one on here. A rafting service operator at a park, southwest China's Guizhou province, was ordered by local authorities to suspend operations for rectification with a joint investigation launched after the service had been advertised offering female companions who can kiss and hug with customers.
Oh my.
Well, that's not anything I've seen in the rental. The rafting company.
Where's the small print on that one?
Reported widely, the female companion service was offered by Lu Bei River Drifting, a popular rafting attraction in Guizhou, beginning this summer.
Huh.
The rafting route, known for its thrilling rapids, lasts between 1.5 and 4 hours, covers up to 12.5 kilometers. Recently, several online users have alleged that the scenic area was offering a controversial companion rafting service.
Interesting.
With staff reportedly promoting a package that included physical contact and saying additional services could be negotiated with the female companions.
Wow.
So, is that right in the pamphlet? Hey, honey, I know where we're going for holidays.
Oh, no, we're not.
Where are you going for the bachelor weekend? Oh, we're going rafting. Oh, that'll be fun. Yeah. Like I said, I can't forget. You got to be joking. According to a statement released by the Joint Investigation Group following media reports about the rafting companion service, local authorities formed a joint investigation team involving tourism, police, and market regulators to conduct an immediate probe. An investigation found that the rafting operator had signed a cooperation agreement with a customer service company to jointly develop a summer rafting tourism product. I think they joined the wrong service company.
Whoops.
During implementation, the relevant companies involved failed to strictly follow the terms of the contract and provided companion rafting services, resulting in negative social impacts, according to the statement. I'm thinking their companion rafting was completely different than what their companion rafting. Hey, you don't have anybody to go rafting with? We got people.
Yeah.
You know?
Let's join forces.
Join forces. You got a new friend. Oh, you don't have anybody to go rafting with. I don't think they communicated.
Yeah.
Whoops. At present, the rafting operator has been ordered to suspend operations for rectification. Further actions will be taken in accordance with laws and regulations based on the police investigation. Well.
What's going on here?
Well, now. Oh, sounds fun.
Interesting concept, actually.
I did not ever see that in any rafting pamphlets I read. All right, well, staying over that side of the world, this one's going to be a bit touchy as it comes out. International Canoe Federation, Paddle Worldwide, plans to fully lift restrictions on Belarusian and Russian athletes starting January 1st, 2027. According to the organization's decision, Belarusian and Russian kayakers and canoeists will be able to compete at international competitions under their country's names with flags, anthems, and other national symbols. Until the end of 2026, athletes from Belarus and Russia will still compete in neutral status. Decision was made in accordance with the recommendations of the International Olympic Committee. Or certain exceptions are provided. These concern tournaments whose right was to host was officially granted before January 1st, 2027. If the full participation of Belarusian and Russian athletes is hindered by the legislation or decisions of the host country's authorities, then they will be able to participate without national symbols during official ceremonies. If the restrictions are even more severe, the athletes will compete in neutral status. So basically what they're doing now. Thus, from the beginning of 2027, Belarusian representatives in kayaking and canoeing are expected to regain their national symbols and full status on the international arena.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I know some people are going to be upset with that.
Hmm.
Pardon, I'm on the fence with this because a lot of the athletes have no interest in the politics.
True.
But.
Yeah. But it depends on what country you're from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do feel for the athletes that have, you know, think what's happening is wrong and have no interest in it and just want to be an athlete.
Yes.
I feel bad
for them.
That's
what most of them do want.
Yeah. I feel bad for them because it's out of their hands. It's out of their control.
Hmm. Yes. And they've missed a few years now from competitions and so on. So it's...
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
Hmm.
I got one more thing here. After an enforced break in 2026, the N3TC DRAC Challenge will return in 2027, promising paddlers, supporters, and families an unforgettable weekend at the heart of southern Drakensberg from the 30th to 31st of January, which is the eastern side of South Africa. Cancellation of this year's event was due to the national foot and mouth disease outbreak. Disappointment for the paddling community and local businesses alike. However, organizers are looking firmly ahead and are excited to welcome competitors back to one of South Africa's most picturesque canoe races in one of the country's premier getaway towns. If you Google Drakensberg,
yeah,
the scenery, holy cow.
Yeah.
Like, I would go there just to paddle. Yeah, when I Googled it early, like, the pictures that came up were phenomenal. Just some of them were just absolutely breathtaking. More than just a race, the D3TC Drac Challenge has become a summer tradition that brings together paddlers of all abilities, their families, and outdoor enthusiasts for a weekend of sport, relaxation, and adventure. Set against the spectacular backdrop of the southern Drakensberg, the event offers visitors a chance to escape the city, enjoy everything the region has to offer, from mountain views and fresh air to local hospitality and outdoor activities. The Drac Challenge delivers an experience that extends well beyond the paddlers on the water. Drac Challenge has always been about much more than canoe racing, chairperson of the racing organization, Greg Hitchens, says. It's a weekend where families come together, friends can reconnect, and paddlers enjoy one of the most beautiful venues in the country. While we were incredibly disappointed not to have hosted the event in 2026, we're looking forward to making the 2027 edition one to remember. Race itself remains one of the highlights of the South African river paddling calendar, attracting elite athletes chasing victory alongside social paddlers looking to tick off one more of the country's iconic river races.
Nice.
Excellent spectator viewing points. Yeah, there's this massive plateau towering over the river.
Yeah, I'm looking at photos now. It looks right? Amazing.
Like, there's some good views of the river.
Yeah.
You'll need binoculars to see. a welcoming race village and plenty to keep the whole family entertained. The event continues to offer something for everyone. Organizers are encouraging paddlers to mark 2027 event on their calendars and turn it into a summer getaway, taking advantage of the southern Drakensberg's accommodation, restaurants, hiking trails, and all the other outdoor attractions. Countdown, the return of one of South Africa's favorite river races, has officially begun, with entry details and dates of opening entries to be confirmed. Drac Challenge is a two-day kayak race. Day one covers 39 kilometers, day two, 26 kilometers. Depending on water levels, there may be some compulsory portages around certain weirs and rapids. Lots of rapids along the routes with names like the Devil's Toilet Bowl, Rock Slalom, Legoland, Mineshaft, Big Dipper, Heaven and Hell, and Wake Up Rapid.
Well, having fun with those names.
There's a lot of them. If you go to drac.co.za, D-R-A-K, Drac, if you go there, it'll tell you all about it, and then it has the rivers, day one, and then there's a little side arrow, and it lists all the rapids.
Oh, wow.
You know, there's like, oh, there's 25 rapids today, and there's 25 rapids tomorrow, sort of thing. Go check that out. And if you're looking to ever want to go do a race in South Africa.
Yeah. Looks fun.
January. It's perfect time of year to go.
Exactly.
The end of January, because what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
In January.
It's summer for them.
When it's crappy weather here,
mm-hmm.
but beautiful there. Go to South Africa. I've actually got a buddy climbing, one of the guys I work with, climbing Mount Kilimanjaro as we speak.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yep.
Good for him.
Yeah. So where are you going? Kilimanjaro? Really? Yep. And then a safari afterwards. Must be nice.
Yeah.
That's all I got. You got anything else?
I do not.
You do not. Well, alrighty. And if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Or you can download and stream our episodes at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.